더시 시도용 시도라. 옴 나모 바그라제 바스데바야. 옴 나모 바그라제 바스데바야. 옴 나모 바그라제 바스데바야.
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 25th Chapter, Text Number 10, The Glories of Devotional Service. Translations and Purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Pata me deva samoham apakrashtum tvam arasi yovagraho ham mamititi etasmin yojitas praya atame deva samoham atame deva samoham Apakrashtum tvamarasi Apakrashtum tvamarasi Yo vagraho ham mamititi Yo vagraho ham mamititi Etasmin yojitastraya Etasmin yojitastraya Tame deva samoha Apakrashtum tvamarasi Yo vagraho ham mamititi Etasmin yojitastraya Ata. Now. Me. My. Deva. O Lord. Samoha. Delusion. Apakrashtum. To dispel. Tram. You. Arsi. Be pleased. Ya. Which. Avagraha. Misconception. Aham. I. Mama, mine, iti, thus, iti, thus, itasmin, in this, yojitaha, engaged, daya, by you. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your maya. And have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations responsibly. Now be pleased, my Lord,
now be pleased, my Lord,
to dispel my great delusion.
Dispel my great delusion.
Due to my feeling of false ego.
Due to my feeling of false ego.
I have been engaged by your maya.
I have been engaged by your maya.
And have identified myself with the body.
And have identified myself with the body.
And consequent bodily relations.
And consequent bodily relations.
Report by Srila Prabhupada. The false ego of identifying oneself, the false ego of identifying one's body as oneself, and of claiming things possessed in relationship with this body is called maya. In Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, the Lord says, I am sitting in everyone's heart, and from me come everyone's remembrance and forgetfulness. Devahuti has stated that false identification with the body, with the self, false identification of the body with the self, and attachment for possessions in relation to the body are also under the direction of the Lord. Does this mean that the Lord discriminates by engaging one in his devotional service and another in sense gratification? If that were true, it would be an incongruity on the part of the Supreme Lord. But that is not the actual fact. As soon as a living entity forgets his real constitutional position of eternal servitorship to the Lord and wants instead to enjoy himself by sense gratification, he is captured by maya. This capture by maya is the consciousness of false identification with the body and attachment for the possessions of the body. These are the activities of maya, and since maya is also an agent of the Lord, it is indirectly the action of the Lord. The Lord is merciful if anyone wants to forget him and enjoy this material world. He gives him full facility, not directly, but through the agency of his material potency. Therefore, since the material potency is the Lord's energy, indirectly it is the Lord who gives the facility to forget him. Devahuti therefore said, my engagement in sense gratification was also due to you. Now, kindly get me free from this entanglement. By the grace of the Lord, one is allowed to enjoy this material world. But when one is disgusted with material enjoyment and is frustrated, and when one sincerely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, then the Lord is so kind that he frees one from entanglement. Krishna says, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, first of all, surrender, and then I will take charge of you and free you from all reactions of sinful activities. Sinful activities are those activities performed in forgetfulness of our relationship with the Lord. In this material world, activities for material enjoyment, which are considered to be pious, are also sinful. For example, one sometimes gives something in charity to a needy person with a view to getting back the money four times increased. Giving with the purpose of gaining something is called charity in the mode of passion. Everything done here is done in the modes of material nature, and therefore all activities but service to the Lord are sinful. Because of sinful activities, we become attracted by the illusion of material attachment, and we think, I am this body. I think of the body as myself and of bodily possessions as mine. Devahuti requested Lord Kapila to free her from that entanglement of false identification and false possession. Om Gnati Manandasya Granam Jana Sarakaya Chaksurin Ritam Jaina Tasmai Sri Guru Venamaha Sri Chaitana Manubhistam Stapitam Jaina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam. This is a very important chapter and a very important verse. Prabhupada lectured on these verses for long times, and on each verse even for a very long time. And he quoted one part of this verse many, many, many times. Aham Amiti. Everything is mine. Or the thought that everything belongs to me. This is a very important verse because it questions the very reason for our existence and poses the question that if the whole world is an illusion, or if I'm an illusion, how can I get out of this illusion? Prabhupada uses the word delusion, which is even more than an illusion. It's a kind of cheating process in which one is compelled to think of something that is not really there. So that is the great delusion, or the grand delusion, it's sometimes called. So her question is very important. She's not just approaching Lord Kapila Dev for the purpose of having a guru or a teacher or a spiritual master, some kind of a someone to lean on, for material reasons. People often want to get a spiritual leader for material reasons. They want to get a benefit, a material benefit. Many people posing to be leaders and gurus, they're giving material benefits, or they're promising that you'll be wealthy, you'll be rich and beautiful. And these are actually the things which keep us bound in the material world, the very things that so many charlatans are promising. Good wealth and happiness and education and so on, success. These are the things which are warned against. Janmaishwarya Shruti Shibir. Aristocracy, wealth, beauty, education. These entangle one in the material world. And as Prabhupada is indicating here, one must actually become frustrated with these very things. One must think these very things that are attracting us so much, these very beautiful things, are disgusting. So intelligent people, they throw away their television set because they realize that they're showing beautiful, attractive, wealthy, educated people all the time. And so this is the illusion. Radha Madana Mohan. They look very beautiful in this outfit today. They made it. But this Mohana means illusion, or sometimes it's applied to Madan Mohan, the one who attracts the illusion, the illusory person, Cupid. There's an incident recounted often in Vrindavan, the beautiful hill on which the Madan Mohan temple is established. It's said there that when Cupid came there one time and Krishna was having his manifest pastimes on the earth, he wanted to attract Krishna with his beautiful arrows. There are different arrows that Cupid has: touch, taste, smell, and sound, and so on. So he aimed his arrow at Krishna in order to be successful. Bowman, one has to size up the object very carefully and observe all the features so one knows how to shoot. And as he meditated on the beautiful form of Krishna with his arrow drawn, he fainted in ecstasy, seeing the uncommon beauty of Krishna. So it's actually Krishna himself, ultimately, who both creates the illusion and engages us in the external energy, manorate na sati davato vihi, and Krishna who pulls us out of the same illusion and attracts Cupid and all the other things, overwhelms all of these other forms of attraction. So Prabhupada has been talking about the different modes, how we're caught up in the mode of passion. When we want to make some remedy to material life, we're caught up in the mode of passion. So for that reason, many people commit suicide. I think there was a statistic not too long ago, but in Sweden, where there's a lot of opulence. Everybody drives a new car, and there's no poverty to speak of, that the suicide rate was higher there than in any other country per capita. So with all the things that everyone sees on television that they have to have and that they should have and that they want to have, when they actually get them, when they actually can have access to them, they commit suicide because they're not satisfying. I was starting to say that people who watch TV a lot, we call them couch potatoes, right? They're couch potatoes. But they do it anyway, even though they've developed this own word. They sort of like to become couch potatoes. They like to sit in a couch and just be a vegetable and be completely impassive. Let their mind float downstream and let the cathode ray just bombard them constantly with more and more and more maya. So this is the big illusion, whether it's on TV or not. Then her very sanguine question is posed so that she can give instruction for everyone how to get out of it. When Sanatana Goswami approached Lord Chaitanya, he also posed a very important question: who am I? Great, brilliant scholar in many languages, a very important minister in the kingdom, and he placed himself before the spiritual master: who am I? Why am I here? What am I doing? So Devahuti is also saying that you have created all this wonderful illusory energy, and everyone is thinking Ahamameti, everything is mine. So therefore, since you've created this illusion, only you can get us out of it. Prabhupada used a similar example when he was preaching about how the Bhaktivedanta Institute should preach, and he gave this kind of funny analogy or metaphor example. He said that we have to use the scientific preaching, to preach in a scientific way, to show them that what they have built up in their scientific way of talking and speaking and analyzing and experimenting and creating is actually false. So the metaphor used was that of the axe handle and the tree. The axe handle said, the axe blade said to the tree, as the story goes, that I'm going to use a part of you, meaning the handle, to cut you down. So, and as also read in the Bhagavatam, that sometimes the thorn has to be removed with the thorn. So one goes to the source of the illusion. The ultimate source of everything, of course, is Krishna. He's the source of the atheist knowledge as well. She's asking him, please now, you've given me all kinds of sense gratification, and now I want to be free from the sense gratification. And the whole sense gratification, at least in this material world with the living entities, Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhava Mitam Tayor Mitu, Prabhupada said, is all contained in these four lines of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That men are attached to women, and women are attached to men. And we can see this not only in the human species form of life, but in every form of life, from the tiny microbic creatures up to the elephants and so on. They use a female elephant to capture a male elephant in the jungles. That's the form of trap they use. They have traps for different types of species, the hunters, but they use the female elephant to capture the male elephant. The most important thing that a living entity can think of is how to get out of my conditioned life, my illusion. And when one goes to ask this question from a spiritual person or from one who one respects as having knowledge, this is what we actually are attracted to by spiritual people. This is why we were attracted to Prabhupada, because we could see that he wasn't in this illusion. He had actually risen above this illusion. He had no attachment to anything material. And that was the most attractive of all things. One of Krishna's six opulences is renunciation. He's completely renounced. So what attracts one? What attracts a thinking person to a spiritual master or a spiritual entity, a great soul like Prabhupada, is to see that they actually have no sense of wanting to enjoy the material world. It actually is meaningless. It's a very dry, almost meaningless thing. So we don't go to such people to try to make a deal. Prabhupada was pointing out that there's a one can get four times the reward if one gives in charity. That's also mentioned in one of his purports, that if you give in charity, according to Karmakandia, we get the return four times back. This is called charity in the mode of passion. And we see people doing this. There's something like 20,000 people who come every day to Tirupati in India. It's hard to imagine 20,000 different people going to a temple every day of the year, but it actually happens. And most of them, they're trying to get a blessing from Lord Venkateshwar or Lord Balaji to give me four times back what I give. And we see people going there with silk suits. They've just shaved their heads up for that occasion, and they've got gold rings and diamonds on every finger of their hand, and they're putting in the hundi box their possessions. And the idea is to become more successful. That's what people want. They don't really want to get out of the illusion. So they're trying to sort of make a deal with Krishna. So this is the most important thing for a human being. How can I get out of this illusion? And sometimes we think that disillusion is reality. And it's said that when we surrender to Krishna, as Prabhupada saying, he says, I will take all your sinful reaction. I will liberate you from all pain, all sinful reaction. So when one comes to that point of wanting to surrender, then Krishna immediately becomes available. And what does he do? It's sometimes said, yasyaham anugranami harishetadanam shanai. Krishna takes away everything. That's the first installment of his mercy. He takes away all these material things. But he also takes away the consciousness that these material things are benefiting me. He actually takes away the thought, the illusion, the great delusion that I'm going to benefit from material life. And that's the greatest thing that Krishna can give us. If he takes away the misconception that I can enjoy material life, that's actually the greatest thing that he can give us. Sometimes we think that if this is the most important thing to act, to ask, and to be free from material entanglement, because it is said in the Bhagavatam that if we do these things, we will gain all the good qualities. And if we don't do these things, or anyone who doesn't do these things, is Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna, he's a possessor of no good qualities. So there's a tendency sometimes to think that if I crave getting out of this material world, it's all I can do. There's nothing else I have time or the energy to do but get myself out of this illusion. And when one thinks like this, maybe harking back to that phrase, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahadguna, that no one is possessed of any good qualities, then one sometimes tries to avoid association with anyone who is not a devotee, thinking that they have no good qualities, therefore I will become contaminated. So this is kind of a misunderstanding of Vaishnava philosophy, because both things exist. The most important thing for anyone to want or to desire is to be free from material life and to struggle very hard to achieve that, which is not an easy struggle. But Prabhupada once gave the example, I think he was commenting on this verse, that Abhavasudev Dutt, who exhibited Vaishnava compassion by saying that I don't care if I have to go to hell and suffer for all the sins of all the living entities all over the universe, I want to take those sins, let me go to hell and let them go to Vaikuntha. Prabhupada said that is our philosophy. Not that we think that I'll go to Vaikuntha and let everybody else go to hell. That is, he said that is not our philosophy. Our philosophy, let me go to hell, let everyone else go to Vaikuntha. So while striving to be perfect, one also has to be compassionate for others and reconcile these two apparently different ideas that may be in contrast or in conflict with one another. They're actually not in conflict because one complements the other. Just as we read in Ishopanishad, we have to understand that Ishivasyamidam Sarvam, everything is actually possessed and owned by the Lord. And everyone, not only ourselves, only have our rightful portion of that, tena jaktena punjita, and we can only enjoy that little part. And that little part is actually prasadam. It's the mercy of the Lord. It's what was left by the Lord, that little part for us to enjoy. So when we talk about prasadam, usually talking about prasadam, something we cook, but it also means the mercy or the remnants of the Lord. It's the part of the creation which the Lord has left for us. And there's no shortage. The Lord is so munificent and so huge that even when the whole universe was liberated because of Vasudeva Dutt's desire, we don't know how that happened exactly, there were millions and millions of other Brahmandas, of other universes, filled with millions of living entities who were fulfilling all their material desires because of the Lord's unlimited mercy to give them the opportunity, or I shouldn't say opportunity, give them the chance to use or misuse their free will. So literally billions upon billions of universes continued and continue to exist even though one was temporarily liberated. That's the Lord's mercy. He gives every opportunity. There's a saying that you give someone enough rope to hang themselves with. So that's what Krishna is constantly doing. He's giving us more and more rope, and we can use it to be free, we can use it to hang ourselves, or we can use it to let him pull us out of the material ocean of nescience that we have no other way of getting out of except to hang onto that rope with all of our strength. So this material world, if we don't try to get out of it, it will ask us to leave. Prabhupada once said in a lecture, he said in our Vedic system, he called it compulsory renunciation. We have compulsory renunciation. We don't like to renounce so many things, or it's considered to be a Kali Yuga prohibition if you don't take sannyas in Kali Yuga. So, but it's compulsory. And that compulsory thing is, Prabhupada says, get out, please, immediately. Now stop this business. Come here. This is Vedic civilization. These are Prabhupada's words. Compulsory renunciation. At a certain time, it may be said very politely, it may be said very bluntly, but it's time. It's time to go. So if one is not prepared throughout the whole life to go, then it will be a very painful experience. The senses are covered in our illusion. When the senses are free from illusion, they're actually open. And we're seeing things in their true light. What we see now, what we perceive with the senses, is not reality because we're covered. Therefore, it's said in the Narada Pancharatra that Pancharatra, sarva parihi nirmuktam paritat dena nirmalam, that all these anarthas, sarva paris, the many different offensive things that we think, they have to be rejected. And we have to engage our service, our senses rather, in the service of the Lord. Then those senses are free to see clearly. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam. Because Krishna is the ultimate seer, and if we see through him, who is the master of the senses, then our senses are actually functional. They're seeing reality because they're seeing through him. Shastra Chakshu, we're seeing through the eye of the Shastra. When we see what Krishna sees, we're also seeing through the eyes of the Shastra. Therefore, it's said to absorb ourselves in Shastra, and then we become Shastra Chakshu, or we see through the eyes of the Shastra. So Krishna is always trying to get us to see things clearly by removing these different veils or levels of illusion. There are many levels, and people cannot overcome these levels of illusion. Now, there was a meeting at the National Religious Public Relations Council that Anudama and I attended, and one of the speakers, Jack Anderson, is a famous writer who writes exposés. He became famous in the journalistic world for exposing different collusions, corruption in government, corruption in religion, just everywhere. He became very famous for this. So he was saying in his talk to us, Religious Public Relations Council, this was the Washington, D.C. chapter, that in his travels to Russia and Yugoslavia, former Yugoslavia, and various other places, and throughout the United States, that a social trend was coming about. That trend was that, for example, in this country, which was once said to be the melting pot, because people came from all different countries, different backgrounds, different races, different nations, different economic backgrounds, different religions, that and it, New York became famous, that all these different sort of neighborhoods, they lived in Manhattan, they all somehow got along because they had their gang wars, and they still do, but it became known as the melting pot. But in recent times, there's the phenomenon of splitting apart, of entropy, or devolution, sometimes they call it, where nations are trying to split into different countries, and that's what's happening in the former Soviet Union and in former Yugoslavia. And one of the reasons this happens is because people are retreating more and more into their religious upbringing, or their racial upbringing, or their nationalistic upbringing, and taking shelter, more and more shelter, that I'm a Croatian, or I'm an Armenian, or I'm a Russian, or whatever. I'm something like this. This is the grand illusion. Nationalism, racialism, different forms of ism that Devahuti is praying to be extricated from. Very, very entangling. People's hearts really flutter when they think how our troops are, U.S. troops are going into Bosnia and they're going to protect. Or when there was the war in Iraq, people's hearts were fluttering. There was this big yellow ribbon pinned on the buildings and on people's cars after the American people won the war. They'll just see a flag blowing in the breeze on a aircraft carrier in San Diego and a naval base, and they'll begin to feel very emotional. I remember I was taught that Nathan Hale was a great patriot because he said, I regret that I have but only one life to give for my country during the Revolutionary War. So this is illusory. And this, according to this gentleman, it's increasing. Rather than the New World Order that the last president talked about, it's becoming a multi-factional world with more and more flags, more and more divisions, more and more religions, more and more countries. That's actually what's going on. So if one becomes, if one doesn't have a spiritual sense of what's going on, this condition will increase. Priyavrata and I were going to take a little walk the other day on Sunday, and we discovered that this Great Falls Park was closed. It's only been closed maybe 4 or 5 days since it started, and it was closed because the politicians here in Washington are having a dispute about the budget. Even though they have billions and billions of dollars at their disposal, there's a certain period of time in which the budget runs out. It runs at a certain date, then they have to fix a new budget. So they haven't agreed on the new budget. So as a result of this, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, about 1 million people were put out of work for 5 or 6 days. And because they again didn't agree, starting last Saturday, they about maybe 200,000 or so were put out of work, government workers. All the people at the park here, they had to close it because their jobs were shut down. I think they're still shut down. So we were about to go in there, and there was one or two people that were left, emergency workers, just to put up signs saying that that you can't go in here. So he saw us go by. I don't think he knew we were Hare Krishnas. We had sort of walking clothes on. And he said, well, this is terrible. And he said, how come you're working? He said, well, he said it's an emergency, so they let me work. He said, the problem is they don't have any spiritual life. That's what he told us. They don't have any spiritual life. So it's pretty amazing to hear it from him. And it was exactly what we were thinking, that these people are arguing over, most of them don't even know exactly what they're arguing over. It's kind of political. But because they don't have Krishna in the center, they don't have any spiritual life, all of their intentions, no matter how good they may be, are completely without any result, because there's no Krishna, there's no spiritual life in any of it. So although they may try, they can't succeed. So I found this nice quote that I'll close with that Prabhupada said about the United Nations. Of course, we know he said many things about it. He was lecturing in Hyderabad in 1974 on this chapter. This Krishna consciousness movement, he said, is actually, factually, the movement for unity of the whole world. And that is actually beginning. It has actually happened. The United Nations could not unite the nations. But if you push on this Krishna consciousness movement, all people of different dimensions, of different nations, different religions, they will join. And then he closed that by quoting the verse we quote at the beginning, Timaram Dasya Salakaya, that the real question, the real point, is to have our senses cleared, or as this verse says, have the curtains or the cataract from our eyes removed so that we can see reality. This is our prayer to the spiritual master, to open the eyes, to open our eyes, and to engage our senses in his service. Tame deva samoham pakrash tuntamarasi Yo vagraho hamama mameti ti etasmin yojitastaya. Now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. To my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations. Any comments or questions? So, as far as Vasudev Dutt liberating the whole universe, and we just all come back all of a sudden from Lord Chaitanya, it's really a chincha ultimately, how all the living entities in the universe can be liberated. And liberation has a lot of different meanings. It doesn't necessarily mean that one goes back to the spiritual world, or that it's permanent. Sometimes liberation is temporary. Sometimes we've heard Prabhupada say that when you chant Hare Krishna purely, you're liberated. Or that when you become a devotee, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that your ancestors, 12 generations back, 50, 100 generations back, it's said in different places, they're liberated. And your future generations, your posterity, they're also liberated. It doesn't necessarily mean that they all go back to the spiritual world, live forever with Krishna, but somehow they're liberated. We understand there's five different types of liberation. One can just be even, well, it's not exactly liberation, but sometimes it's called liberation. One can temporarily emerge into the Brahma Jyoti. So, but even all liberations are not necessarily permanent. And therefore, when we say that liberation took place, and it's said in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita that there's no shortage of conditional life or conditional living entities, or entities that are illusion, that they gradually fill up the material world again. It means that the delusion, or that the misuse of our energy, is what is causing this continual flow of living entities into the material world. So when he says that there's like a bag of mustard seeds and millions of universes, they're always there, and they're always filling up. So in one sense, we want to liberate everyone, because that's our duty. But we also know that by a higher arrangement of Krishna, there's always a material world. It always exists. One fourth of the ekapad vibhuti of the whole universe is material. So in this lifetime, we don't have so long, we have to try to liberate as many as we can. We have to try to give Krishna's mercy. And in the end, hopefully, by virtue of that and our own efforts to liberate ourselves, we'll get out of this material world. But it's actually a chincha to understand what that verse exactly means and what we mean by liberation, how exactly and when all these living entities were liberated. Even why is a very mysterious thing, because Krishna can liberate all people at all times, all living entities. Why he happened to choose Vasudev Dutt's desire at that time is also not, we can't really say, we can't give a definite answer. He was very compassionate. He was the embodiment of compassion because he wanted to take the sins of everybody. But maybe there were many others too, like him, great souls who desired the same, and their desire didn't result in everybody being liberated, all the living entities being liberated. There's also those pastimes of Lord Chaitanya where he's embracing the trees, the palm trees, and they're said to be liberated. It's also very mysterious. How are they liberated? Where did they go?
He said, Father, that doesn't mean necessarily. He gave the example. He said, if the son commits a crime, say murder, the father may say to the judge, oh, he's a young man, he has a full life to live better than put me in jail. But that doesn't mean the judge is going to commit a crime. So just because the compassionate soul says, give me the sense, doesn't mean that the Christian is the crime.
Yeah, it's the desire. That's a very good point. It's the desire that one actually wants to do that. It's not that he sent Vasudev Dutt to hell to suffer, even though he said, I want to go to hell. So it's really that the living entity's desire. Everyone is desiring in the wrong way. So this was a great example on a symbolic level as well, that here's someone who actually wants it. And because he wants it, I will give him not everything. He wanted to go to, he said, if this is the deal, I'll go to hell. But he didn't send him to hell. He fulfilled the positive part of his desire. Yes?
I was thinking that our Lord liberates future generations. But like he's still in the world, right? Like he's in the liberated his forefathers. After that, he delivered his son, grandson, grandson, of the Balmaraj, then Bhagasura, the son of Balmaraj.
Yeah, because Krishna's seeing time as eternal, we're seeing time as temporary. And it's like Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they're seen as demons, but actually they're devotees, they're giant vijay. In the long term, they were just here temporarily. In the realm of Krishna's time, from that perspective, it was not even a blinking of an eyelash that Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu came into this world in three births and performed their pastimes. It was all very quick, very quick. And Krishna has a plan. When we say it's a chincha, we never know what Krishna's plan is. He may liberate, he may not liberate. He may create a demon. Vitrasura was also a great, great devotee. And when he spoke, he was speaking even greater philosophy than Indra, who was a demigod. So one may be a demigod in one birth, a demon in another birth. These material bodies do not really tell us what our past karma is. Nobody knows what that is until one has a spiritual body, like Narada Muni, who's able to understand all the past lives. So out of millions and millions of past lives and various activities, we've come here, we've arrived at this point. We've arrived at this point. It's like a network of karma. It's like a big net, a binding net. And we have obligations. As soon as we come in, we're obligated to our parents, we're obligated to demigods, we're obligated to the forefathers, we're obligated to every single living entity in the face of the universe, it says in the Bhagavatam. And the purpose of our life, even though we have all those obligations, is to get out of the material world, is to free ourselves by engaging in pure devotional service. And if we don't engage in pure devotional service, we'll never get out of them. And if we do engage in pure devotional service, we can also automatically satisfy all those different living entities that we are indebted to by pure devotional service. Otherwise, by the onslaught of the modes of especially passion and ignorance, we may try for goodness. Even goodness becomes entangling because the modes of passion and ignorance completely intertwine them. So we can't really get out of these modes until we engage in an absolutely pure devotional service. Everything else is part of that great delusion, even the mode of goodness. Yes? One thing is, what do we mean by karmi? What does karmi mean? Tadā tam karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachara. Krishna says in the third chapter that one works, karmi means one who works for fruitive results. And it's said in that verse that the very thing which binds us to this material world can be the very same thing which liberates us. Loko yam karma bandhanaha. So when we talk of karmi, what we're talking about is a person who's engaged in the external energy of the Lord, who's working to get a result. But sometimes when we speak of karmi, we're speaking of a meat-eating, fornicating demon. But that's not the Vaishnava vision. That's not what Vasudeva thought about so-called karmi. So in one sense, it's kind of like a derogatory word, which maybe isn't a very good word to use, because that karmi could be a devotee, and he could be a guru even. We don't know, because we don't know the karmic background. So what we want to communicate to those, to such persons, is prasadam, and the words are actually prasadam also. Our words are prasadam. What we want to convince them of is not that I'm part of a spiritual movement that's going to save the world. I want to communicate to them that I care, that they are a devotee, that Krishna's inside their heart, and that I'm really compassionate. Then we're fulfilling our obligation to all living entities, because then we're exhibiting real compassion. Then I'm communicating to him, you might be trying to enjoy this material world. But you should still go to the spiritual world, even if it means I have to go to hell. That's what we should be communicating to them. Even if it's by speaking a few words or a few sentences, they should get that feeling that here's someone who really cares, not about that I have a new TV or a car or a house, but who really cares about me